On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Great to have you here. Appreciate your time on this weekend morning. As many of you, I guess, clocks went ahead, clocks go back, daylight savings, New York Marathon, and another beautiful weekend here in New York City. I thought it was important for me to do this show by myself this week to speak around the biggest story in sports over the last, you know, certainly year, if not a lot longer than that. And that, of course, is the current NBA gambling scandal, the one that took down for now Hall of Famer Chauncey Billups, 10-year veteran Terry Rozier, and longtime player and coaching assistant Damon Jones. Because there's so many incorrect things that are being said about A, compulsive gambling, B, where we're at with legalized gambling. And because of my life experience, which, as you guys all know, played out quite publicly, you know, I thought it'd be important for me to kind of clear up some of the misnomers out there and speak about it in a manner that very few people can based on life experience. Normally on this show, as you know, over the 5+ years now that Dan Trelawer and I have done it, we speak to fellow gamblers or former and current compulsive gamblers who are in some level of recovery, myself included. I'm now more than 7 years into my recovery, have not gambled in any way, shape, or form. But for a period of about 2 years of my life, as many of you know, gambling was the most important and only thing that mattered in my life. And over the course of those 2 years, it led me down a very bad path, led me to make really bad decisions, not just centered around my gambling, but also other decisions I made in life that ultimately cost me everything, including my freedom. I'm one of the very lucky ones who's been able to rebuild his life post-gambling disorder and in the middle of recovery. I'm not the only one. Many people do it. I'm just fortunate that while mine played out publicly, my recovery's played out publicly as well. You know, one of the biggest questions that I've been asked, or what I've seen other commentators speak to and ask the question that doesn't really have an answer for them because they're not aware of this world, is why would men in this case, men who've made well over $100 million, ever get involved with gambling to a level where they would potentially make really bad decisions that would cost them their careers, their livelihood, and potentially their freedom? And that's what that's at the end of this road for all three of these defendants. Obviously, the mob guys that are somehow related to this are looking at potential jail time as well. And while that fancies everyone's interest and piques their interest, you know, the reality is that there's nothing that's all that good or fun about this story. And the thing that's going to be hard for a lot of you to wrap your heads around is that gambling addiction doesn't care how much money you have. It's not the type of addiction that even takes a lot of money to have to go down such a bad path. I have gambled with multimillionaires, and I've gambled with people who are minimum wage employees, and the addiction doesn't differentiate between the two. Let me further state that in regards to Rozier and Chauncey Billups and Damon Jones, we don't know yet if they are compulsive gamblers who fell prey to the addiction or if they were just guys looking at a quick, easy payday and if they had to participate in a rigged poker game or give buddies information that they could then wager on as a means to make more money if it was just greed. And they're two very different things here. In my case, I became a compulsive gambler. My gut is one of these guys, if not all of them, have some level of gambling addiction. But the money's not important because it's all relative. If you're worth $100 million, that just means you can play at higher stakes. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that you can play more or that, you know, you're any different from the guy that's betting a $25 hand who's making $30,000 a year. The amount of money you can wager is just a symptom of how much money you have. But when you go down a road where gambling becomes omnipresent and becomes the only thing that's important in your life, it just dictates how much you can bet. So, for example, when I was making really good money doing mornings on the fan and I had access to significant sums of money to gamble with, I wagered more money per hand. If I was only making $25,000 or $30,000 a year, I would still have wagered frequently just as much, time commitment just as much. It's just my wages would have been smaller. And I've told this story many times over the years since I've gotten help and gotten myself into recovery, now 7+ years into recovery, that I didn't recognize I had a problem and I wasn't willing to accept that I had a problem until I went out to a rehab center in Prescott, Arizona called Algamas. And the reason I tell this story is that it will illustrate to many of you why the amount of money is irrelevant when it comes to making bad decisions, because your brain's been poisoned by this addiction. And for those of you that are saying right now to the radio, it's not an addiction. It was a choice you made. You're an idiot. Your word's not mine. A degenerate, which is a word I fight against every single day of the week. You happen to be wrong. If you go to all the medical textbooks, gambling addiction is a recognized addiction, much like alcoholism is an addiction, drug addiction, and gambling is right there with those. The problem with gambling addiction, of course, is that it's the only addiction of all the addictions I know of where you can hide in plain sight. And every other person I've met in this journey, regardless of background, regardless of sex, regardless of socioeconomic standing, process it the same way. So when you read about a guy that is worth over $100 million or has made over $100 million and is guaranteed $26 million this year, and you say to yourself, why in the world would that guy risk everything? The answer is because he can't help himself. He can't stop from risking everything because he's got bitten by the bug, something that I can relate to because I did as well. And when you get bitten by the bug, you're willing to start processing things that you would otherwise process rationally, irrationally. So let's use the Rozier story for a moment. And again, all this is alleged. He has not been found guilty by a jury of his peers yet. We'll go with what's been alleged by the federal government. The allegation is that he pulled himself out of a game early and told people in his life to wager on the under. It's one of the reasons that I am of the belief if you really want to curb problem gambling, and leagues are protective of the integrity of the sport, one of the things they should do is get rid of underwagers. Underwagers are the only wagers that a player that's playing can control the outcome of a wager. Because I can guarantee you that I'm going to miss every shot if I want to. I can guarantee you I'm not going to make a good pass. I can guarantee you I'm not going to get that rebound. What I can't guarantee you is that I am going to do all those things really, really well and achieve the over. So if you wanted to bring integrity back into the world in sports, specifically in this case in basketball, I would say no underwagers allowed. So use Terry Rozier and the allegations against him as a great example. If he is guilty of what they've said, I get it, because he's bitten by the bug. And when you're bitten by the bug, you now associate with other people who like to gamble. So Rozier, if he was bitten by the bug, the fact that he would make such an irrational decision and risk $26 million this year for what amounted to $200,000 worth of wagers doesn't make any rational sense to anybody listening. But when you're in the throes of the addiction, you're not processing things rationally. So it makes all the sense in the world. Who's ever going to find out that I purposely took myself out of a game so that a bunch of random people across multiple states at a dozen or so different sports books all wagered on my under? There's no way to connect that back to me. The problem, of course, with that thinking is the more people that get involved with it, the more likely it is that one of those people decides to tell the Fed something to avoid going to jail themselves. And I'm sure as this thing plays out, if Terry Rozier in this case is guilty of what he's accused of, that's what we're going to find out. Because when you wager on the legal sites, there is an independent company that represents all the sports books and all the leagues to flag suspicious wagers. So if all of us, if the average amount of money ever wagered on a Terry Rozier over or under is, and I'm making this up, $1,000 total from coast to coast, and then all of a sudden, on the same game, at multiple sites, there's now $200,000 being wagered on it, that automatically gets flagged. There's an algorithm built into the gambling sites, and they flag suspicious wagers. So it gets flagged. This is why everyone that's attacking the NBA, the attacks are misplaced. Because the NBA is in bed with the sites, as all the other leagues are, and because those sites use this independent company, the wager got flagged. If this was old school times and no one's paying attention to the wagers from one casino to the next, this never gets flagged. Nobody ever finds out about it. And they do this scam over and over and over again to the point of taking millions of dollars away from the casinos. So I do give the NBA credit. I do give the sites that flagged it credit, because without that honesty and transparency, we never find out. So that's how, just to understand the lay of the land, that's how the feds find out about it. It's flagged. They go to the league does an investigation. The sites also let the federal government know about it so they can investigate it. Okay, question number two. Why did the leagues investigate it and find nothing was wrong, but then the feds come and investigate it and they find out what they think has happened? Simple. The NBA is not investigating every single guy or gal that made the wager across multiple states, across multiple casinos. The FBI has the ability to do that because they have subpoena power. The NBA reaches out to the gambling sites. They may even reach out to the casinos, the brick and mortar casinos that took the wagers. They certainly interviewed Terry Rozier. Point two of this is why I bring that up is because compulsive gamblers are also world-class liars. It would not shock me if Terry Rozier is guilty of what he's been accused of, if the NBA sat him down, even with hot, bright lights over his head, and questioned him about what he's being accused of, if he would have passed 17 different lie detector tests, because you become really great at lying. But that's also the difference between the NBA's ability to investigate and the FBI's. The NBA is not threatening to put somebody in prison. The NBA is not telling you, we know what happened, just tell us the truth, or you're going to go to jail. The FBI can do that, and in my opinion, that's what happened here. But to finish the thought about the amount of money you have and making bad decisions, I know it's hard for a lot of you to understand it. The best way I can explain it to you is if you have a constant itch that you can't control yourself from scratching. That's what compulsive gambling is like. And it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter how much celebrity or fame you have. You have to constantly scratch the itch. Whether that's underground card games, whether that's nonstop casino visits, whether that's doing it on your phone, which is obviously prevalent now, you have the ability that every time you feel the itch, you can scratch it every single time. Now, that's part of the advent of technology and the legalization of online wagering in now 38 states. And that's why we're so concerned about the growing number of people that become gambling addicts, because in the past, you might have had the itch. You couldn't scratch it, at least legally. Now you can, and that's why stories like this are going to be much more prevalent than they ever would. The second thing I've said on every interview show I've done, which I know is hard for people to grasp, and I can tell you from experience, because I counsel people internationally who come to me because my story played out, asking me for advice and asking me in effect to be, you know, a brother to them and help walk them through the stages of recovery. There are people right now today in every major sport, in every country on the planet, that are wagering on the outcome of their own sports. This is not the last scandal we're going to have. And for a lot of you, you don't even remember the last scandal. Many of you have already forgotten the Calvin Ridley scandal when he was on IR wagering on NFL games and lost the rest of his season. And it turned out that he risked about $1,200 and it cost him like $30 million. And people are like, oh, that's just one knucklehead. I think you're starting to get a grasp on the fact it's not just one knucklehead. There's a lot of knuckleheads and they're playing sports today. On that, let me take a quick break, and we'll continue on in a moment with Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
All right, welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you. I know I've been rambling a bit this morning. It's just important for me to tell you some aspects of this story so you have a better understanding as you try to figure out the answer to the question of why. Why would guys do this? On the Chauncey Billups side, look, I played in underground games. I have seen electronic card machines be fixed. I'm well aware that some casinos have been accused of fixing their shuffling machines. When you put six decks into the machine, it shuffles it. There's actually technology that can control the shuffle, and those machines can read the cards. So it's not a surprise to me that a high-level underground game would have done some doctoring to the card shuffling machine, so that they either know what cards are coming out to what players, or in my case in blackjack, knowing where the majority of tens are in the deck, you know, to control the outcome of blackjack play. It's dirty, obviously. And the concern here is, again, Chauncey Billups made over $100 million. If he was aware that the game was rigged, why would he ever get into it? Well, my gut is, again, if he is proven to be guilty, he is not right now. But the answer to me would be simple. He's desperate. and it's access to more money to gamble with, and it's money that people in his life might not know about. Again, going back to the premise that all compulsive gamblers are world-class liars, you know, maybe Chauncey or people like him, myself included, don't want to show withdrawals from a bank account because people in your life who see the withdrawals are going to know about them. And then you have to explain why you took X amount of dollars out of the bank account, and God forbid you're wiring money, why are you wiring money to this place or that person? So it's a way to deal in pure cash, which is the gambler's best friend, because cash doesn't exist to anybody else outside of your world. So if Chauncey is guilty of what he's being accused of, which is inviting quote-unquote whales, people willing to lose a lot of money at the gambling table, it would make sense to me that he gets a back-end cut, he gets it in cash, and nobody ever knows. There's no track record of it. So how do you prove it? The way you prove it is, again, because gamblers make irrational decisions. You can get away with that once. But if now you're hosting regular games and part of the premise is come play cards with Chauncey Billups, and Chauncey's not really getting an appearance fee, he's getting an equity fee in the outcome. He's incentivized for everybody at that game to lose because he's going to get a cut of it. And we know the game is rigged, either with the shuffler or crazy X-ray technology, which I've personally never seen, and I have a hard time buying into the fact that they pulled that off with nobody knowing. But it's certainly possible in a darkly lit room where you're playing cards. The reality is that he's addicted to the cash. And the last thing I'd say about athletes getting involved with this, and one of the reasons I'm so turned off by the NCAA's completely tone-deaf decision, you may not have seen it, but a few weeks ago, the NCAA approved and ratified a decision that allows Division I, II, and III college athletes to legally wager on professional sporting events. There's no outcry from athletes saying, how come we can't wager? We want to wager. They're not allowed to wager on college sports, of course, but why the NCAA would go out of its way to greenlight allowing college athletes to wager on professional sports is arguably the most tone-deaf decision by a governing body in the last 100 years in this country. They did announce a couple days ago that they moved the start of that back a few weeks from November 1st to November 22nd. But right now, the way it stands, on November 22nd, college athletes, with the NCAA's blessing, are going to be allowed to wager on pro sports. What does that mean? A major, major influx of gambling problems. And here's why. The fastest growing group in the country right now of compulsive gamblers are young men who are competitive. It's why people like Dan travel the country to talk specifically to Division I college athletes. Play it out. College athletes, by default, are competitive men and women. Competitive people do not like to lose. That plays right in to becoming a compulsive gambler. So the athlete who's uber competitive and hates losing, wagers on a game, goes to a card table, plays craps, you name it, and they lose. And then that competitive channel in their brain kicks on and says, I'm not a loser. I'm not going to tolerate losing. So what do? They bet more. They throw good money after bad because I'm not a loser. I don't tolerate losing. I'm going to go win. And what's problematic about that is then they start gambling recklessly. Then there's no discipline at all. There's no concern of, can I afford to wager what I'm wagering? All their brain is telling them is, you're not a loser. Fight back. You've never lost in your life. You've never given up. And now you're making really bad financial decisions. This is why we've always been concerned about athletes getting involved with wagering, because they don't know how to walk away when they've lost, more than you and most other regular people who don't have that competitive gene in their body at the same level. Compulsive gambling is the perfect setup for competitive athletes to fall prey to it. So I know I've been rambling for about 25 minutes now, and I appreciate you putting up with it. It's just, it's near and dear to my heart. I lived it. And it pains me when I get the next phone call from a family that's desperate because their son or daughter is in harm's way. And when I get those calls, it pains me. And I get those calls every single day. I'm trying to shed light on what it looks like. And the number one thing you can look for if you are concerned that a loved one is a compulsive gambler is a change in how they socialize. Compulsive gamblers become loners. Compulsive gamblers don't want to high-five you, and it's not like the guys yelling and screaming at craps table or the videos you might see of guys with big wins. compulsive gamblers retreat into a world of their own. And if you notice a friend that's acting like that, just tap him on the shoulder and ask him if he's okay. Because if you get to somebody before they start making a lot of irrational decisions, there's a really good chance you can help them and get them the help they need before they risk and lose everything. So we're going to follow along to how this case plays out, obviously. It is the biggest scandal in sports in a long time. It is not going to be the last time we have a gambling scandal. The NFL is going to have one. College sports is absolutely going to have multiple ones. You'll see the NHL, Major League Baseball, they've all had them already. They're all going to experience more. And then at some point, they're going to have to make a decision. How do we protect the integrity of the outcome of our games? There's no reason to allow people to bet on the unders because players can control it. That's the very first step I would take. Number two, I would immediately outlaw in-game wagering. Players are aware of their stats. Players are aware of wagers that are afforded to them based on their outcome. If you eliminate in-game wagering, you eliminate a player, you're tipping somebody off from the bench or even on the court or on the field of play or on the sideline that something's about to happen. So why not just get rid of it? Every opportunity you have to protect the integrity of the outcome is something you should do. Number three, and this should be an easy one, and it's confusing to me. It was at the time and it is now. There's no reason why active players in any sport should be allowed to endorse or market sports books. You know, Kevin Durant has a sports book deal. LeBron James has a sports book deal. Many players in the various leagues have deals where they become the face of a sports book. Like, why in the world would you allow an active player, you know, to endorse a sports book where people are wagering on the outcome of that, of what that guy does? If you're concerned about the integrity, current active athletes should never be allowed to endorse sports books while they're playing. Those are only three easy steps that the sports books and the leagues can agree to and take to get back to protecting the integrity. If they fight you on those things, then you would know firsthand that they're not interested in the integrity at all, and they're only interested in how much money they can make year after year after year, which is why these suggestions I've made will never take hold. And I know that going into it, but I want to give you some answers because everyone's got questions, but no one's got answers. Those are three very simple fixes that can at least take us closer to integrity as opposed to where we are now. Thank you again for listening. Dan Trelawney is back with me again next week. It's been 5+ years that we've done this show, and I think it's more important than ever that we continue to do it, and we will right here on Sports Radio 101.9, The Fan.